Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
Today on Family Talk. Philippians 2 says we're to do nothing out of selfish ambition. And 1 Corinthians chapter 10 tells us that everything we do is for God's glory alone. Today, you'll hear from a man who did things for his own glory by chasing worldly aspirations, which caused his family and faith in God to crumble. Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Jim Veldheis, sitting in for Dr. Dobson today. On this broadcast, you'll hear the testimony of Dick Gouch, who is the founder of Family Life Ministries and served as the pastor of Christian Fellowship Church in Columbus, Ohio for 20 years before retiring in 2004. Pastor Gouch will share how he selfishly pursued money and success before God radically humbled him and turned his world upside down. Let's take a listen to the first part of his testimony titled, God Made Us a Family, on this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
I came to tell you a story, and if anyone had told me 11 years ago or longer that I might be doing this any morning of my life or any part of my life, I would have told you that there was just no way. And I want to say this at the outset. We have the entire family's permission to share what I'm going to share this morning. I think it's important you know that, because what we have to share, some of it isn't very nice and isn't very pretty, and it's a little embarrassing for all of us. But we think that God wanted us to do that. My childhood was, I'm the oldest of two sons, born to a couple who were religiously and politically mixed in their views. And the reason that's important is, as long as I could remember, we didn't discuss religion in our home. And in fact, we had a Republican and a Democratic newspaper in our house every day, and I had to read both of them. So tolerance was the name of the game in my house. I was about 9, going on 10, when my parents said after dinner, Dick, we want to see you in the living room. Now, that usually meant I was in trouble. They'd found out something, and I was going to get it. But this time, it was different. It was, son, it's time that you go to church in Sunday school, and we want you to take your brother. Now, since your mother and I don't want to influence you, neither one of them went. I'd not been baptized as an infant. They said, you select a church. Now, I was a very precocious 9-year-old, which means difficult to handle. And I set about to examine the various church doctrines of my community. What I did was I chose the church which was closest to my home and had the most friends in it. Unfortunately, that's the way some churches are chosen today. But because of that denomination that I wandered into, it was necessary I go to catechism class. And the pastor in the basement of the church would teach us all about God and Jesus Christ and our church and denomination. And I went to tease the girls. I don't know what the others were there for, but I really wasn't too thrilled about it. But somehow, in the process of church and Sunday school and catechism class, I remember feeling certain that there was a God, that there really was a God, and that He was all-powerful. I was just impressed with that whole thought, and I decided that I needed to please Him. It seemed to me to be a good idea if I would please that God. And so for a long time, I kept score. So there's some other scorekeepers here, huh? I tried to balance out the days, good and bad, and always just enough good to get it over the hump, you know. Of course, I kept score. I was a little prejudiced. But anyway, it was about that time, that about 13, that I realized, a little before that, I realized that I was different than the other kids in school, and I mean that. I was different, and that frightened me and caused me to really turn inward. And my problem was not a bad problem, except that I was already taller than all the kids in school and all the teachers, and I felt like a freak. I mean, I longed to be small. You know, I used to walk around like this, you know, just try to look small. And I had a teacher who noticed the symptoms, and she took me aside one day, and she kept me after school and told me that, you know, my size was a gift from God, and I should use it for good and wear it proudly. And she kind of awakened in me a little self-esteem. Of course, little did she know what I would do with that. Well, I got to high school, and I was, you know, automatically one of the tackles on the football team as a freshman, and this was fantastic. I mean, in fact, by the time I was a junior, I figured out I was perfect. I mean, I just couldn't see anything nor was wrong with me. I It was the end of football season, and I lived then in the suburbs of Chicago, and the Chicago Tribune printed its all-star football team, and much to my delight and surprise, really, I was named to the first string as a starting tackle. I know many of you thought I was probably a quarterback or something, but as a tackle. Anyway, our little school, it came out on Monday, and the school was, you know, well, I was just a hero that week, and I really ate it all up. But what it was, on Friday, we had our little school newspapers. Did you have those? Little four-page job used to come out. Tell you the truth, I still have a copy of that. But anyway, it said, I was interested in a paragraph next to the last page because it said in there that there were two girls that thought that Dick Gouch was awful cute, and it gave their names. Now, I was now about 6'3 and a half and about 225 pounds. I want to tell you, I'd never been called cute before. So I thought about that a long time, and the one girl was Janet. She was a junior my year in school, and she was 5'6" or 5'7", blonde, and very pretty. Well, she was queen of our class, which meant if I dated her, it would be in keeping with my image. And the other girl was a sophomore, and only 5'2", a redhead, and queen of her class, so I could date either girl. And I thought about that a long time, and it seemed to me that if I would date the younger, smaller woman, I would be able to control that relationship. Guys, do you know the women are laughing right now? Well, I did that. And I want to tell you, that whole experience was so traumatic that I decided never to do it again. And so I married her and I brought her with me today. Well, we went off to college. My dad had a heart condition and died just after I enrolled at school on a scholarship. And in fact, it was the first week he had taken a real turn for the worse. And I came home that weekend on Friday, and by Monday, my dad was dead, and I wired to college and canceled the scholarship. And we had a business. My dad had bought a little grocery store to keep us in case anything happened to him. And my brother was younger and really affected by this, and my mom was in trouble. And so I just stayed home. I really wasn't going to go to school. I really gotten put that out of my mind when a friend of mine from high school I graduated with stopped by and said he was enrolling at a college nearby, and my mother heard us talking. She reminded me of the promise I had made my father, literally a deathbed promise, that I would go to college and graduate, which was his dream for me. So I went and enrolled at a school nearby, half-heartedly and reluctantly, and I commuted the first year and really spent most of the time at the home and in the store helping my mom. Well, the second year, my mom insisted I live up on campus. My brother had started to pitch in, and things had leveled out, and go out for football. And so I did, and I made the team, and within the first week, I was a starting defensive tackle, and all of the things which made Dick Gouch, what he thought he was anyway, came back to play. And so all of the ego, and I was massing a big one by this time, was really doing well, and I still had Sue, and so my life was in pretty good shape. I graduated from college in my senior year, of course, with a degree in business administration and psychology, and Sue and I got engaged about April, I think it was, and we'd only dated 6 years. I married my high school sweetheart, as the story goes. We talked about things a lot, and we decided that since I was now a management trainee, which I'll tell you about with the company, and my wife was working, and we decided that we just bought a little shell home. We were finishing it ourselves, that Sue should work about 3 years, I told her. We'd get the mortgage paid down, furnish the house, and we'd start our family. Well, I don't really want to say anything against her. She's here this morning, but she never really has listened to me very well. We were married in August, and she quit work December 31st, expecting our first child. We talked about that a long time, and I finally decided that it was okay if Sue had a girl first. And she did. She really did. I wouldn't have minded, but she had another girl, and then we had a third girl. Well, our life had started out that way, and it was a happy one. I had left college and taken a position as a management trainee, and now that doesn't mean anything to anybody in this room. In my case, however, it was prophetic. I was definitely management material. wasn't going to take them any time at all to figure that out. I was with the company about 3 months, maybe, and the assistant personnel manager of a national company of the number one plant in the company resigned to take a position with someone else, and they decided to screen all of us to see who his replacement would be. And I thought it was a terrible waste of time. I mean, I was right there, you know. And at 21, I became the youngest assistant personnel manager in the company's history. Now, some people were surprised, but of course I wasn't. And about 18 months later, due to a major management shakeup in this company, that branch, all of the upper-level management people were fired or transferred, including my supervisor, the personnel manager. And now the company was really in a spot, and they began looking the whole organization over, coast to coast, looking for his replacement. Took him about 6 weeks, and again, I thought it was a terrible waste of time. And at 23, I became the youngest personnel manager in the company's history in the number one plant. And, I was in that capacity for quite a while. And, I just realized that there was something wrong with a job like this. I really got bothered about it after a period of time because it seemed to me that it was unfair for somebody with as much talent and ability as I had, and you now know I thought I had it, to be limited to an organization where somebody above me had to decide my promotions and my pay raises. I mean, if I was as good as I thought I was, and I thought I was pretty good, it seemed to me I ought to control my own destiny, that I ought to be able to control my income and my promotions, and so I ought to find a career where I could do that. It took me 6 months to find it, and I left the security of the personnel manager of the number one plant of this national company to become a life insurance salesman. It required only three things to be a success in those days. It required a tremendous lust for the material things of this world, and I certainly had that by that time. It required a tremendous competitive spirit, and I had that, and playing athletics as I did. And then only one other thing. You should have a tremendous pride and ego. I was a little overqualified in that area. But I, before the first full year was up, I had doubled my income. And to tell you the truth, I thought I had died and gone to heaven because, I mean, there was awards and meetings, sales meetings every Friday and trips and, you know, I mean, more money. And I mean, it's just too good to be true. I got so good, I got obnoxious. Jeremy, one of those? There were 25,000 salesmen in the field in this company. I mean, it was big. And I ranked in the upper 5% of that, okay? Now, you can imagine with the ego I started with, right? Oh, anyway. In the process of this and the children coming, I have always enjoyed, and my wife will attest to this, I want to be number one in her life. I like that position. I've always coveted that place in her life. And I think, ladies, if your husbands were honest, they do too. And it was fine until our oldest daughter, Terry, was born. And then I noticed, as much as I love that little girl, there was a little less of Sue for me. Now, being an adult, grown male, I was able to handle it without too much difficulty until Debbie came along. And then there was a lot less of Sue for Dick. And I hurt. And I was a little resentful. And I needed to find a way to fill the vacuum and the void in my life. And I think men who feel those things find many ways to do it. I don't know my solution is any better. In fact, I'm thinking some ways it was worse because I became a workaholic. My father had been one, and it was an easy pattern to follow. And I started the 15, 16-hour day, 6 days a week. My wife was in favor of it because she wanted me to be president of the company and or vice president. I intended to be. And so I abdicated my responsibilities in the home, and Sue became the mother and the father and looked after that, and I took care of all of the big decisions in the world of business. We operated fine. In fact, the company was now touting me as a management candidate. They were convinced that I was a very special person. Of course, I knew that. But it didn't happen quick enough. I was finally promoted to manager to Springfield, Illinois, and I was in no time we were succeeding there. And my company still seemed it didn't seem to move fast enough for me. It was there that Sue got pregnant for the fourth time. We had our son, Mike. Well, our family was complete. I was becoming a little disenchanted with this national company, and we had friends, personal social friends, with two of the insurance companies whose home offices were in that city, and they had often talked to us or talked to me about coming with them. And, well, I was very impressed with that, and they said, Dick, we're opening the last 16 states in this country. We operate in 34 now, and we're going to open the last 16. And we think that's a major step for us. And he said, you know, we wanted you to come with us. We're prepared today to offer you your choice of those 16 states if you'll join us. Well, I mean, what can you say, you know? I was very flattered and very impressed. I went right home and told my wife that we're probably going to be joining a new company. And we began the process of deciding which of the states it would be. And there was California, Washington, Oregon, Florida, Pennsylvania, New York, some of the New England states, and Ohio. Would you believe I chose Ohio? Well, I'll tell you why. I mean, as we talked about these states, in 49 of the states, this company had no competition and would have none. I mean, they'd walk in and just take over a market. And they kept talking about this one state that where they would have competition. And it really, every once in a while, it came up. And they were very concerned about it. They didn't know whether they'd open it last or what they should do or who they didn't have anybody to put in there. And, I mean, it was really worrying. One day at lunch, I said, hey, wait a minute, guys. Is that really Bobby? Oh, Dick, yeah. I said, would you like me to go over there and take care of that for you? He said, would you? Sure. Yeah. That was Ohio. And that's the very reason I chose it. I intended to come over here, get the organization worked up. There was another company here in Ohio, a competitor of theirs, and I was going to get this whole thing really going good, and the stock of this Ohio company would go down and down and down, and pretty soon my company would buy them out, and you know, gosh, they'd have to appoint a new president of that little company. And we all know who that would be. I'm surprised Sue's able to live with this, you know? We chose Ohio, and we chose Columbus because it was geographically the center of the state. It was the state capital. It just offered everything that we really wanted. From the day I had been baptized and through catechism class, I'd started something about that time, which I continued for 28 years. And I really believe when I get to heaven, I'll know if this statement is true. I think it is. But for 28 years, I don't think there was ever a night that I went to bed that I did not say the Lord's Prayer. Now, I wasn't that religious. It was my way of keeping in touch, and if I ever needed him, at least we'd be on speaking terms. It was kind of a good luck charm, you know. But in truth, God had become less and less important in my life. You see, I had figured out that it wasn't God anyway, it was Dick Couch. I really had. I mean, it really wasn't God, it was me. And so he wasn't as important, but I stayed in touch. You know, I wish I had read that verse in Proverbs before all this, because you see, God's in this. And he's in the move to Ohio, and I don't even know it, because I don't even know God exists at this point. But, you know, Proverbs 16:18 said, pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. And if I'd only known that, because boy, what's about to happen? You see, I was a very prideful man, and I hope I've made that clear to you. And God was about to set in motion a plan to break the will of a prideful man. And I want to tell you, men, ladies too, but men, I want to tell you something. He does know how. He does know how. Well, we had one problem. We moved to Columbus. We had some friends we'd sent Christmas cards to for a year came from our high school, and we called them and said, we're moving to Columbus. And they said, fantastic. They took us and showed us around Columbus, and they convinced us there was really only one place for us to live. And in keeping with my image, we moved into Upper Arlington. It's all part of the program, you know. Everything was perfect. I was going to be home more now than I'd ever been before. I traveled more, but I was really going to spend more time at home. We rented a home in Arlington initially. And I mean, this was just beautiful. It was the culmination of our dreams. And Sue and I would sit and just be thrilled and amazed that, you know, everything was fitting together now. I was the king, the czar, and the president of Ohio. I mean, the company didn't know what to do, and they just said, here, Dick, run it all. Well, that's what I'd always dreamed of. I had a large salary, an unlimited expense account, and all of the authority I ever wanted. We had one tiny problem, only one. Our four children, we love them all very much, but since the first three were girls, we had we'd spent a lot of extra time and energy in developing our oldest daughter, Terry, because she was to be the forerunner, the pace setter of the other two. And it was essential, we felt, that Terry set a good example. And Terry was, much to her mother's credit, not mine, but she was the perfect young lady. Her father was proud of her. She was not only attractive physically, but she was sweet and sensitive, and she was a good student and neat, and Dad was thrilled with his daughter. We moved. Terry was very popular in Springfield, but Terry's shy, and when we moved to Columbus or Arlington, we moved in January. All the kids in school had their friends, and Terry felt very much alone and couldn't make friends very easily. And so for Terry to go to school was very traumatic. And every morning I would drive her to school, and as I'd back out of our driveway, I'd look to the left first to see if there are any cars coming, and then I'd look to the right. I'd glance at Terry, and she wouldn't be saying anything. She'd be sitting next to me and all dressed up and her books stacked neatly on her lap and her hands folded and her head down. And there were tears running down my daughter's cheeks. I mean, that's how tough it was to go to that school alone. But we knew in time, we got involved in a church our friends belonged to, and it would be okay, we kept telling her. Well, that summer, we intended to take a long vacation to Florida and really enjoy ourselves, and Terry was looking forward to that, to get away from there. And the school wrote and said that because of the difference in Illinois and Ohio credits, and not her grades, but her credits, that it was necessary for Terry to pick up some summer school things to get it done before she graduated. So we, good parents, we talked it over and decided that we ought to send Terry to summer school that summer and cancel our trip. Now, to show you the kind of young lady she was disappointed, but, you know, obediently and lovingly, Terry went off to summer school. Soon she brought home a little friend, a girl named Carol. Now, we have had in our home for years the FBI, the Family Bureau of Investigation. You have that. And discreetly you check on the family, the girl, or the friends and the families, and you try to find out a little bit about them without being too obvious. And we did that, and we were thrilled to find out that Carol's father was the head of a department at Ohio State University, and Sue had talked to Carol's mother, and she was a lovely woman, and so we were impressed with Terry's friend. But that summer we noticed, too, that oftentimes lurking in the shadows were two of the raunchiest, scrungiest-looking guys you ever saw in your life. I mean, you talk about weird dudes. I mean, these were a pair of them, and they obviously were following the girls everywhere they went. Now, as you can imagine, I could be rather an imposing father figure if you wanted to date one of my girls, right? And I want to tell you, I looked imposing whenever I saw those guys. They didn't get near the house, you know. Terry started changing. By the time September came around, Terry had given up the dresses and the blouses and the skirts and the matching shoes or outfits. And she was in jeans, very frayed and very bleached, and in some cases strategically patched. She started smoking, and we didn't like that. And as I'd come home, Sue would tell me about the confrontations that she and Terry were having over all kinds of things, her dress and the curfew and just duties around the house. And I really wondered, you know, whether it was Terry or maybe Sue was getting too picky, and we talked about it. We're good parents, I mean that, or at least we thought we were, and so we talked about it at length, and we decided it was just a phase, that since we were the Gouches, it couldn't be anything very serious. And then there was the letter that came that changed our lives. I'd gone off to Cincinnati. I had hired several men around the state, and I was going down to work with Doug and spend a couple of nights and 3 days with him. And I hadn't been at his desk very long. The phone rang. Of course, Doug answered it. And I was surprised when he handed the receiver to me and said, "It's Sue." Sue's not in the habit of calling me unless it was something very good or very bad. So I was kind of anxious to hear her voice even. And the minute I heard her voice, I knew there was something terribly wrong, and I was anxious. And I heard Sue talk about the mail came that day, and in it was a letter from a girlfriend of Terry's whose family had moved to Michigan, and she had set it aside and thought very little of it. Later that morning, Carol's mother called, and she was sobbing, just sobbing uncontrollably. And she said, "Sue, did Terry get a letter from that girl?" Because Carol had. And she said, "Oh, Sue, I don't know why I've done this, but I've opened Carol's letter, and I've read it, and through her sobs, she said, "Sue, you better read Terry's." And she hung up. Well, Sue went to the letter, and she'd never done anything like that before. And she's never done it since, but she finally opened the letter and read it, and that's why she was calling me. The letter revealed that our lovely little girl was hopelessly and helplessly involved in drugs.
What a dramatic end to today's show. Make sure to tune in tomorrow to hear the conclusion to Pastor Dick Gouch's powerful testimony right here on Family Talk. If you missed any of today's broadcast, go to today's broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. There you can listen to today's show in its entirety, and you can check out some other favorites from the past as well. That's drjamesdobson.org. Then click on today's broadcast tab. We'd also love for you to get connected with our various social media pages as well. Find us on Facebook by searching for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, or on Twitter and Instagram by typing Dr. James Dobson FT in the search bar. Keep up with our accounts to follow our latest broadcasts, read our informative articles, and interact with our inspiring content, all of which you can share with your friends and family. If you'd like to fill your life with more Christ-centered content, like and follow our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Lastly, won't you consider blessing Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk with a financial donation? If you're able to help us in the sparse spring months, go to drjamesdobson.org or call 877-732-6825 to pledge your support. That number again is 877-732-6825. Thank you for your support and for joining us today. This is Jim Valdeheis, reminding you to listen to part two of Pastor Gouch's testimony tomorrow, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.